Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hi, this is Zoe Routh, and today I'm here with Juliet Ford, who's one of the directors at Farah Jasini Dunn. And I have to say a couple things before we get started with Juliet so that people have some context. I know this firm quite well because my husband is also a director, so I have some good inside knowledge into how the firm operates and what is it interested in. And aside from that personal interest, I think FGD is quite a funky organization, and I love the people in it. And we're going to find out a little bit more about that with Juliet today. So welcome, Juliet.
Thank you, Zoe, and thank you for the very kind introduction.
You're welcome. I've got to be kind. You guys work for my husband.
Work with,
that's right. What did I say? I didn't say work for, did I?
Something like that.
Oh, my God.
It's yeah, okay.
Definitely work with. See, I'm blushing. Good thing this is on podcast. So one of the things we should also say is that Juliet will also be a table host at the upcoming Unconference, The Edge of Leadership, where she will be hosting conversations with other like-minded business people in the Canberra region around this topic of social agenda. So let's find out a little bit about your background. You've been a lawyer for a long time, so tell us a little bit about your trajectory in the profession.
Sure. I have been practicing family law, and I suppose, and been a lawyer since around 1991, I think I was admitted, or 92. And I did my degree at Monash in Melbourne, so I'm a Melbourne girl growing up. The reason why I always did law was because I was interested in understanding how society worked. And what sits behind how we operate on a day-to-day basis is something called the rule of law. And it's a set of rules that we all buy into. And the question is, why do we buy into those rules and why do we follow those rules? And there's a whole lot of reasons for that. One is just, well, I'll get into trouble if I don't follow the rule. And the other one sort of really goes into that whole question of culture, what we all believe in and what we all think is important for us as a community. Because unless we do believe in those rules, there is no sense of community. So that has informed a lot as to why I've continued to practice in law and been a lawyer. I would then say that when I finished my degree, the question was what area of law I practiced in. And I was very mindful that there would be a lot of really good commercial lawyers and that I would be a really good commercial lawyer, but my interest was more in people and in talking to people on a day-to-day basis, because I really enjoy listening to their stories. And not only listening to their stories, seeing whether or not I can help them have a more positive narrative to that story, arising out of, obviously in the world of family law, separating from their partner. So the question for me then was, well, I've got a certain skill set and a certain interest in people, and where I really, I suppose, can do my best work is where the law really intersects with a whole lot of other things going on in people's lives on a day-to-day basis. And that's what really interests me. And so I then found a pathway, indirectly through a commercial practice, into practicing in family law. So that's been really the guide for me throughout my practicing years. There was another bit to it, which was purely and utterly I wanted to be working in an area that was national so that I would have mobility as a young person. Mm-hmm. So I could go anywhere and I could still be able to work in the area. So there was another aspect to all of those relatively altruistic ideals I've just been talking through. Then the interesting thing for me was really trying to find the best place where I was as a person intersected most authentically with how I wanted to practice. And so as a young lawyer, I gave private practice a go and found it didn't actually address what might have been more philosophically where I was at and what I wanted to do. So I left private practice and I upped sticks from Victoria and moved to Western Australia. And I took on the position as the head family lawyer in the Aboriginal Legal Service in WA. Mm. Now, that was probably one of the highlights of my career, the 3 years that I worked there. I was an incredibly inexperienced lawyer. And when my boss gave me the job, she told me that I was grossly inexperienced and probably lacked the skills to be actually do the job, but that she was going to give it to me anyway.
Wow.
And give me the supports around, which she did. And she was a brilliant mentor throughout those early years of my career. So when I look at my career now, 20 years on, I have dipped in and out of both the public sphere and the private sphere. So I've worked in the Aboriginal Legal Service, and you know, it was a unique position and allowed me to really drive family law for Indigenous people throughout the whole of WA, which was quite remarkable because for me the measure of success was actually Indigenous people coming to a civil jurisdiction and seeking a court to help them in relation to their family, which when you think about the history of the treatment of Indigenous people in this country and their experience of the law purely in a coercive space, to actually be able to effectively give them the courage and the belief that the rule of law would support them in a civil jurisdiction was probably what I considered the most successful thing that I did in my years there. And that's really driven anything I do in practice, is all about not necessarily result, but ensuring that the outcome is one that is reasonable, meaningful, that the system hasn't been abusive in itself by the way in which it operates, and to achieve the best possible outcome for those particular people. So I have done a lot of work in that community legal centre sector. In Victoria, I worked at St Kilda on a voluntary basis. In WA, I also worked at Sussex Street on a voluntary basis.
What's that? What's
That's a community legal centre, okay, similar to St Kilda and Welfare Rights and Legal Centre here in Canberra.
Yeah.
And then I have also dipped back into the private sector. And so in WA, I also was an associate at Dwyer Jurak when I left ALS. And when I came here to Canberra, I made a very conscious decision not to go back into the public sector and to diversify out of family law for a while. And so I remember walking past the doors of FGD on the fifth floor at our previous building and deciding not to give them my CV because I was fairly confident they would give me a job. I was good value from a problem. I'm not overstating my skill set. It's just that I knew that the number of years of experience that I had and the kind of work that I'd done, that I was a useful employee and that they could pay me a certain salary and they would make a lot of money from me. But I didn't want that. And so I took up a job with Welfare Rights and Legal Centre and worked with Welfare Rights for 12 months and grew to love administrative law and understanding the political intersect between social policy and how law works in that environment. And it was a brilliant position. And I probably would have gone down the administrative law path and left family law behind, but for the fact that the guy whose job I was looking after decided to come back off Parliament House and the gig he was doing up there and take up his position at Welfare Rights. So I then segued into Women's Legal Centre, and I've done some teaching through ANU, and then through my work with Women's and at ANU, I found myself applying for a position as a registrar at the family court, and I took that position for probably roughly just under 2 years before Farah Jassini Dunn approached me, and I came and joined them in 2001. I was very surprised they gave me a job because if you looked at my CV, I'd never lasted anywhere longer than 3 years before the boredom factor kicked in and I was off doing something else. And so I've been with them since. And during that time with FGD, I've continued to do work with Women's Legal Centre here in Canberra. I don't do anything with Welfare Rights anymore, and we do different things. One of my passions has been about bringing the rigour of your training in the private sector to the public sector so that the lawyers in the public sector are as good as and are as rigorous in their practice of the law as anyone in the private sector, so that anyone receiving free advice doesn't feel like they've got a second-class lawyer and that their lawyer is as good as the guy in the suit.
Or girl in the suit.
Yeah, yeah.
So from 2001, you've been at FGD.
Yep.
And you became a partner shortly after, or?
Yeah, I became a partner in early 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in terms of when you take on that stewardship, that leadership role in an organization like this. I know FGD has been very focused on developing a family-friendly environment that supports women with young children in particular, and has a really kind of different ethos and ethic when it comes to its people and its lifestyle for its staff. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's interesting when people analyze our firm from the outside and identify those things as being different or unique, because one of the real drivers for us as a firm is really to be authentic in what our core values are. So that gets down to the people who you are in business with and the people you employ. And when you then start devising what your core values are and why you exist, and they then resonate with everybody in your organisation, then what we do isn't unique or unusual for us or a point of difference. Mm-hmm. It just is who we are. So the interesting question then is, how come this firm owns those core values and other firms don't?
Mm.
That's probably where there's, which we won't talk about today, but which I think is actually quite an interesting question. So when we were looking at what our strategic plan should look like, and then in that what our core values are, what our strategies are and why we exist, that was really then about coming up with something which resonated with everybody, that was meaningful, that was still recognizing the reality that we're in private business and we exist for the purposes of obviously being able to pay our staff, look after people, that is our clients, but also to generate profit, because that's the reality of a privately run organization, but to do so in a way which was sitting within what our core values are. The next challenge is, once you draft that document, that you live it, and that doesn't become this dusty old thing that sits in the bottom of a drawer and everybody ignores it and gets on with what they think might be the case. So for us, those core values really cross 8 different areas. Now, we know all the theory says you should only have 5, but as lawyers, we couldn't go down to 5, so we decided we would live with 8. And they included things such as innovative and dynamic. It included things such as a work environment which supports our lives and values women. It includes things such as success of the organisation and its future, absolute integrity and honesty, production of excellent work. Now, what you hear in none of that is a measure of dollar. But our thinking was, if we did all of those things, we would be successful by way of, let's say, your balance sheet and what your balance sheet looks like at the end of each financial year. So what does that mean? Well, for us, how that's translated in reality and what we do, that is, our actions speaking louder than what's on this piece of paper, has translated to a workplace which has a relatively unique space to it. It's activity based, there is no overt hierarchy, and it was all about the client. It was all about, when somebody walks in this door, they didn't get this big message that we, the lawyers, are really important and you're our client and aren't you lucky to be here, but about welcoming you into our space, into what we consider our home. So that then generated a whole lot of ideas about, okay, we now need to be more open, we need to move around, we need to share the spaces, we need to share the good spaces and the bad spaces. And so that creates a sense of collegiality and communication amongst us in the organisation.
I think it's worth just describing that a little bit for the people listening, because it is quite a unique environment, and much has been made of the it's not so new anymore. You've been here 3 years, I think?
2 years, just over 2 years.
And this office design that you've got, and it is activity-based, so that means that people have got laptops and iPads and they can sit wherever they want. And there's, as soon as you walk up, it's a very simple desk, and then the doors open onto this beautiful kitchen, and then a lounge room, and the fake green lawn, which is awesome.
And the swing.
And the swing, of course. There's a swing, and it looks pretty relaxed, and yet there's this edge of professionalism too, and there's these little pod meeting rooms, and then there's the engine room out the back. where people can work around and get their work done. But the meeting rooms for the clients are all around. So it really is a very different... as a visitor coming in, you get this a sense of calmness coming in here and a sense of you can relax here, which is very different if you go into another corporate edge legal firm, which has got, you know, they're on the fifth floor and it's like... it's
important artwork and big... big foyer with the tap, tap, tap of someone's heels across the floor. And the quietness is more about, it can be intimidating, particularly if you're popping in with a pram and little kids and thinking, I don't fit here. How am I going to explain to my lawyer what my situation is when that person is most anxious and stressed about their kids not making noise? And interrupting all the important work that's going around.
Mm.
And this place is all about giving the client a voice. So the artwork on the walls here is our children's artwork, that is kids of people who work here. And the spaces, it's not about cutting corners. There's a real difference between activity-based and open plan.
Mm.
You have spaces which are dedicated to the kind of work you need to do and which respond to the different personalities of the people who work here.
Mm.
Introverts prefer to work in a quieter space. Extroverts love working with people.
Mm.
So you have to respect that and also ensure and encourage people to upskill so they feel comfortable in the spaces. So it creates conversations. It creates collegiality. And it really does send a clear message to both people who work here and the people who come here that we really try to live that part of our strategic plan. The professionalism is I'm always interested in hearing people talk about because it's been really about redefining what professional is about. And we often talk here about, look, you don't have your certificates on the wall. You don't have your props. It's you. You have to project that yourself by the way in which you dress, by the way in which you talk to people, by your demeanour, because then you can complement what looks like a relaxed environment by really starting to put an edge on what professionalism is all about. So, and when you achieve that and you achieve that well, then you'll continue to be a relevant, modern, innovative legal practice which will continue to answer the needs of what the clients are asking for. And hopefully then the success of the organisation going forward. You're talking about women, and we often talk about why it is that we actually put the word women and not family or make it more gender neutral in the strategic plan. It's often a conversation that is raised. Mm. Often women raise it. And the answer that I give people is that if I did neutralise it, the conversation wouldn't be had. But if I actually make a point about saying, well, look, this is about recognising that for the majority of women, they take on more of a primary role in, if not doing the work within the family, organising and running the business of the family, that then means we have a conversation about it here. And because people raise the question, you can then step through the door and then start having a conversation about the role of women, the role of professional women, the whole having a career and continuing to take on the role that you wish to have in your relationships at home, whether that be with children, whether that be with your partner, whether it be anything that takes on a much broader spectrum. Because I really talk about employing the whole person and not the artificiality of the private-public split.
Mm.
So that's what that's about. And then here, everybody owns it. Everybody owns the proposition. And it's about then keeping good people because we all know what the cost is of turnover.
Mm-hmm.
You lose an employee, costs you $100,000.
As much as that.
By way of retraining, the culture that walks out the door, the corporate knowledge that walks out the door, the re-establishing with the new person. And people focus upon in employment practices upon the cost of someone going part-time or going on parenting leave or any of those things and then coming back and having to accommodate those person's different hours. But look at what that person brings to your organisation by way of corporate knowledge. If you retain that person rather than that person then deciding it's all too hard, then A, you're going to attract more good people rather than just half the workforce. So your pool of talent broadens out because people want to come and explore what you do and see whether it works for them.
So when we talk about, and you've kind of just alluded to it then, so supporting women, professional women who are the primary caregivers or family managers. So the firm is very flexible in terms of allowing people to have extended maternity leave and then come back part-time. Is that what you're talking about in terms of your approach?
Yeah, that's part of it. It's all about recognizing what's going on in a person's life. So I'll gender neutralize it now.
Okay, sure.
I'm working out what's going on in a person's life and the workplace accommodating that in order to facilitate and support them to be very effective and efficient at what they do here.
Okay.
So, for instance, the flexibility in the workplace proposition, whether you work here or work at home, is a policy that we have here, which applies to everybody, not just professional staff, that is your legal professional staff, but your non-lawyer trained professional staff. It's not something just for this group, it's for everybody.
Right.
So we can accommodate that proposition very effectively because we've made this decision to be paperless, to be even in our treatment of everyone across the organisation, because everyone's professional in different roles and different capacities. Some people will require different leave for different purposes, and we look at that on a case-by-case basis. So the conversation here starts to create a proposition which goes much broader than simply valuing what might be considered the role of women in a professional space, because the other part of that value is all about a work environment which supports our lives. And people are at different stages in their lives. Some people want it more income generate than others. Other people want to have more time off than others. So it's actually about broadening that proposition, about looking at the whole person.
Mm. So more, I'm interested in this social conscience that you and the firm has as well. So not only taking that to looking after the whole person of the staff members, and there's also what you contribute to the community. And FDD has long been a supporter of different charities and different organizations. Can you tell us what kinds of things the firm has supported over the years?
Sure. We've supported a number of charities in Canberra, and we've always made a decision for it to be very much a Canberra-based proposition. So in the past, we've supported the Cancer Foundation.
The ACT Cancer Council.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you. And we've supported Men's Link, and we continue to support Men's Link and the work that it does. And we also support currently the Tara Costigan Foundation and the work that it's done. So they're three that come to the top of my mind. There have been others over the time that I've been with the organisation in one-off grants or subsidies or time that we would give to particular organisations. And we've sponsored certain events during Law Week for the Women's Legal Centre. We have sponsored and supported other organisations which are trying to raise money for particular Canberra-based charities. So, for instance, last week I was involved in the P2P² International, which is run by an accounting firm here in Canberra, and we all as businesses donate funds as an entry fee, and the funds all go to an identified charity or two charities which are very much ACT-based. So there are different ways in which this organisation supports local charities in the ACT.
Why did the... maybe it's an obvious question, but I think it's worth asking. Why do that? So as a company, why would you choose to support charities?
Because part of our role in the Canberra community has got to be two ways. We have to, just as if I'm an individual living in my house, we as an organisation are a corporate citizen in the ACT. And being a corporate citizen with the philosophy that we have, I mean, our underlying reason for existence here, why we are in business, is to help and empower people with compassion and innovation. That's our key phrase. That's written on the door on our Melbourne office in Melbourne. For every client that walks through the door, they see those words. So we as a corporate citizen do that in two ways. One is how we operate on a day-to-day basis and the running of this business. and how we look after our staff. But the other bit of that is all about our role in the community. I'm being really careful about not using the words give back because it sounds as if it's something voluntary that we do. I actually see it as something that we must do. It's compulsory for us to be able to have that role in the community in order for us to be the kind of corporate citizen that we are. It's really interesting. One of my staff members on Friday just happened to say to me, you know, it's fantastic that you guys are doing this. And he was talking about something we'd just done recently. It might have been either the tennis that we were involved in last week, or it might be the work we're doing in the Tara Costigan Foundation, or something like that. And he made this comment to me. He said, you know, you guys are doing this and you don't have to, because the big publicly listed companies are obliged to do this. You know, there is a certain requirement for them to identify part of their budget being for sort of social conscience, if you like.
Mm.
Now, whether or not, I don't know whether that's something they must do or not, but obviously to look good out there, it's an important thing to do. And he just happened to make this observation. Now, for two reasons, I thought that was brilliant. A, it was an employee of our organisation that just happened to think that about this firm, and therefore his sense of loyalty to us would be greater because he's really proud to be part of this organisation that's doing those things. But secondly, more importantly, we're actually acquitting on what I would consider to be authentically what the role is of this organisation is in the community, and that is to step into certain spaces and do certain work in certain spaces, or volunteer our time in certain spaces, or volunteer our solicitors' time in certain spaces in order to carry through some of the obvious things which are really important for this community, the Canberra community, to be and to continue to be the kind of community that it takes pride in.
That's lovely. I love that whole notion of being a corporate citizen and what that actually means, and that it's not a voluntary thing. It's incorporated into the DNA of the business.
It's kind of a social contract.
Social contract, yeah, that's lovely. So last question for you. What's your philosophy on leadership? Just this easy, short question.
The most effective leadership is when you're walking with people and not in front of people. So for me, that's all about the team and about the team all being on the same page in relation to what we want to achieve at the end of the day. Now, within the team, everyone takes on different roles. And some of those roles can be more overt than other roles, or more in the driving seat than other roles. But so long as all of those roles complement each other and are valued for what that role is, then, and they're all buying into whatever might be the vision or the, for us, why we exist or what our strategies or core values are, then that is then effective and successful leadership. I'm always talking about people doing things which may be not necessarily what you want to do, but which is really good for the success of the team. So leadership is really about people sharing with you and standing with you, rather than you standing in front of them and telling them what they must do. Pure rule-based compliance is the lowest form of success. When people own the rules, and you need to have them as you get bigger, and everyone in the organisation is owning the rules, and everybody is complying with the rules because they understand what's going on and what the values are behind those rules, then that's successful leadership.
Fantastic. Juliet, thank you so much for your time this morning. I've enjoyed hearing your story and your philosophy and what the firm is doing in terms of its social contract with the Canberra community. And I'm really excited to have you as a table host at the Edge of Leadership on conference. Some lucky people are going to get to spend the day with you. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Zoe. And thanks for the opportunity.